The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to the TOVG podcast,
yes.
Where life is not that bad if you just play the right kind of video games.
Right.
Yeah.
As a segue from a joke that you'll hear after the show, I would...
Stay tuned. Listen to the whole thing for some bonus material of George kind of being nihilistic.
I'm not nihilistic. Okay, I was talking with a friend of mine. I've been playing Dark Souls 3 this week.
Oh, that's why you're nihilist.
I'm not well, it is like kind of a, you know, nihilistic aesthetics. But anyways, no, Dark Souls 3 is great. I think it's great. But I was talking to a friend who went from Dark Souls 2 to Dark Souls 3. He loves the first game, not DS2 as much. Never played all the way through Bloodborne because he doesn't have a PS4. And the thing is, Dark Souls 3 does borrow a lot of like elements, tricks, stuff that they learned, and aesthetics too from Bloodborne. Like, I guess in 2014, all of a sudden, FromSoft decided they really like tricorn hats, which makes sense for Bloodborne because it's a kind of Victorian setting. People weren't wearing tricorn hats, but it is less removed from a medieval setting than it is in Dark Souls 3, when all of a sudden people are wearing tricorn hats. But anyways, he's absolutely enamored by Dark Souls 3. He thinks it's like sublime and great so far. And I think it's great, but not like sublime yet. I'm still waiting for some good mid-game twists. And he was just like, oh, come on, man, you're just being cynical. And I don't think it's cynicism. It's like, no, there's a law for this. The law of diminishing returns. If you break that law, you're not a cynic. You're a criminal. You're breaking the law. The law of diminishing returns.
George doesn't like fun again.
I don't have fun. I'm having fun. Listen, this is my fun voice.
That sounds like your gun to your head voice.
Right.
Gun to your head?
Yeah, as in someone has a gun to your head and they're saying that you need to say things like you're having fun.
Oh.
And then you go, I'm having fun.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying
you,
like
you're white,
your
so
head,
you don't even
like,
know what that, you know, that is to have a gun pointed.
Gun to my head. I don't know what a gun is, nor why it would be pointed at my head.
I play video games. I know what death and violence and sadness are.
You're like, you're trying to make a case of why you're human. I'm that, human, guys, I swear.
That quote is great in several contexts. Anyway, go on.
So let's see. I will admit, though, I have been salty all week because Counter-Strike Go has become terrible.
Hooray!
Starting at Monday, I found out that there is no way to skip a really annoying grind I've not been looking forward to doing ever since they released an update that requires you to grind to be able to play the competitive mode, which is the good mode in Counter-Strike Go. All the other modes are some variant on stupid mode, but starting last year, in order to curb smurfing, they require new accounts to do an 8-hour grind, and apparently old accounts too, because I played the game for years, but took a break for about a year, and now want to come back into it and find out either I either don't want to, or I'm going to have to grind for 8 hours through stupid mode to get to level 3. Hopefully it takes 8 hours. Goddamn. But it really became disgusting and genuinely made me mad when I noticed that friends of mine who want to play with us on this Counter-Strike night we're going to have tonight, they bought the DLC for $6 and unlocked missions that gave them like enough XP per mission that they did this 8 hour grind in 1 hour.
Oh,
hooray.
And like,
damn.
If we all had to do the grind equally, I would be mad, but I would not be as like, I was a wreck Monday when I was looking at how slow this meter was filling up and realizing that there was actually with how much stuff I had scheduled to do this week. And let's be honest, I just want to play Dark Souls anyway. there was no way I was going to be able to get to level 3 by the time my friends wanted to play Counter-Strike with me at the end of the week, and that's a horrible feeling. It's fucking Counter-Strike. Like, how...
Right.
Like finding 5 friends to play a good all round of Counter-Strike with is now really, really hard to do because you actually have to find 5 friends who have surpassed the point of this grind that you gotta do now.
And granted, this is... CSGO is not free to play like TF2, right? Mm-hmm.
It's $15.
Yeah. Okay, $15 is not too bad, but like...
That's part of the problem, actually. The reason they did it in the first place was to curb smurfing, which I just be like, oh god, okay, that's horseshit, but I guess I'll put up with it. But now, with this DLC thing, it seems like it's kind of there to push DLC sales, which I think is absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, I mean... Seems like the usual microtransaction model, but... Yeah.
When Payday does it, everyone loses their shit. And when Counter-Strike does it, everyone doesn't even care.
Well, when Payday did it, people lost their shit because the stuff you could pay for gave you... were like, they were weapons that had better stats than weapons you can get for free. So you were paying for a more powerful thing to fight in the multiplayer, and essentially giving you a pay to win edge.
This one is just time, which is mostly the microtransaction tends to, you know.
But I don't know if it's like any better or worse. Like, locking off a competitive playing edge is horrible horseshit. Locking off being able to play competitively at all is also terrible horseshit.
I mean, I don't want to back up microtransactions because I think they all suck and I think we could do without them, unless in very specific situations they could be done right. But
cosmetics.
Is your anger stemming from the fact that you just realized this week and you had to grind through the week instead of, like, if you realized this a month ago and this day was planned a month in advance, would you have as much salt towards this?
I probably wouldn't. And the thing is, I knew about this a year ago. I did not know about the DLC thing until this week. That pushed it over the edge, but so did the time pressure of friends wanting to play Counter-Strike on a stream this Thursday. Oh shit, which I still haven't tweeted about, but I think our solution now is to actually, like, find 5 fans and just, like, get them in a team and pretend to play competitive mode. Because the casual modes in Counter-Strike are 10v10, and the game really isn't built to play like that.
Right. And, like, you want to play like the good modes.
I do. All the other modes in Counter-Strike are stupid mode. Competitive mode's the good one, unless you want to just shoot the shit and load up a dedicated server and relax. But I don't want to do that. So my choices here are limiting.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jimmy, you just typed in the outline that you've been playing Overwatch.
I just remembered because
I'm
really
interested in Overwatch these days because I feel that's going to fill a Counter-Strike shaped hole in my heart. But granted, it was filled by Rainbow Six Siege, but only my rich friends play Rainbow Six Siege because it's still $60.
Well, okay. I will talk when you are done with your.
I am totally done. I want to hear about Overwatch. Done? I'm really interested in Overwatch.
Okay. First thing, I don't play Counter-Strike at all. I never really have, so I don't know if it'll fill a Counter-Strike shaped hole in your heart, but if you have a TF2 shaped hole in your heart, goddamn, this is going to...
I have a big TF2 shaped hole in my heart.
This Overwatch is fucking... goddamn, dude. That was the most fun I've had with a multiplayer game in so goddamn long. Like, barring like Duck Game.
Wow.
Because Duck Game sets a high standard.
I love
that's high praise, dude.
The gold standard for multiplayer gaming these days is fucking Duck Game.
It's so fucking good, okay?
I know.
I will shill all day for Duck Game. Go buy that fucking game. Go tweet at Landon and tell him he's a nice man.
But the fact that it's like just like that guy, like Landon, this like sarcastic metalhead who's just like making this stupid ass Duck Game that he thinks is hilarious is the gold standard that fucking Overwatch is. I think that's great. I think that's hilarious.
I mean, granted, I only got like so I played in the stress test closed beta. I thankfully got in, finally we'd been able to pretty much confirm my suspicions about Overwatch, which is that it's going to be a fucking great game. And yes, it's a fucking great game.
Why though? What's okay. different about a shooter? Because I'm just in this realm of like shooters, whatever.
All right, so the whole deal with this and with a bunch of others that are kind of in the similar vein, but they're not that, like, I'm hearing that they're not very similar in the end, like Battleborn and Paragon and all that, is they're like crossbreeding elements from MOBAs and FPSs. So your characters all are, I think the game that this most feels like is definitely Team Fortress 2, because the physics, the way you move, the way that you do your like your abilities, and like the kind of rock paper scissors that all the characters have with each other, where like, oh, this, like, you know, oh, they have a Widowmaker, somebody switched to Genji because he's like, he's the sniper destroyer, like that character is like meant to get in back lines and take out snipers. Like there's a lot of that going on, where you'd see that in fucking TF2, where yeah. It's like, you know, oh, they have a sniper, we need a spy on our team because that sniper is just ruining us. And you know, there's 21 characters, and they all sort of dynamically sort of counter each other.
21
but, like,
is a fuckload.
It is, but the thing is that, like, oh god, it's so hard to put into words, because I didn't play it for too long. It was a 36-hour beta, and I played, I'd say, like, maybe 6 hours max. I didn't play that much. But I did play enough to know who, like, what characters I like playing, what characters I'm not good at, and they seem to have something for everybody. Whereas, like, TF2 had something for everybody, but I don't know, it's hard to describe. There are characters that, you know, are good for someone who wants to stay really back and play patient. There are characters who are best for, like, rush down up in your face. There are melee characters. There are, I don't know, it's fucking crazy. And the good thing for people coming from TF2 is there seems to be, like, a one-to-one character with all the TF2 classes. So, like, you have something that you can feel familiar with. Like, I played Demoman in TF2. Demoman was my thing. I loved Demoman. I loved sticky jumping. I loved the grenade launcher. I loved all that. And the character Junkrat is essentially the Demoman. He doesn't have sticky bombs, but he has a little, like, mine that you can throw. And when it explodes, it shoots people back and it makes you shoot back. And you take no fall damage, so you can just use it to essentially sticky jump. He has a grenade launcher. It's exactly like the demo's grenade launcher. And so I felt really at home playing him because he functioned like a character I was familiar with. But then they have, like, ultimate abilities because it's, like, kind of inspired by MOBAs a little bit. And so, like, Junkrat's ability, when he charges it up, and you charge it up by, like, doing what your class is good at. So, like, dealing damage or hitting people back or stopping other people from doing something. His ultimate is he, like, winds up a little, like, motorized tire with spikes on it, and you drive it into the enemies and explode it, and it does a bunch of damage. It's so much fun.
Is it a drone kind of
it's
tool?
Kinda, yeah. And like, people can shoot it and destroy it before it blows up and stuff. And I don't know. I feel like this is the logical step from TF2. Because yeah. I went back and played TF2 last night because me and my friend kind of getting bored of Diablo 3. And we played some TF2, and I was like, this is fun, but I understand what Overwatch is doing that I am having more fun with.
And it's kind of refreshing to see these kinds of games crop up these days. Like, I feel like we're kind of having a 2004 thing going on, where vastly different companies are looking at other games that have already existed and been, and they're just like, oh, we can do this better. Like, very yeah. much in the way that Rainbow Six Siege is Counter-Strike, but better.
Right.
It's so clear how Overwatch is, TF2 is old as shit and they never made a TF3. Let's just do
right.
that.
And not only that, but, like, I had a discussion with Todd about this, and my definition, his definition of world building are a little bit different, but the way that they fleshed out the Overwatch world and, like, the story and sort of the, like, lead in to Overwatch as, like, an entity, like,
yeah,
it's Blizzard quality lore. Oh my god. They have, like, 6 minute animations that are just, like, they're, like, literally, there's one of them where there's this cool fight in, like, a museum of, like, old stuff. It's like an Overwatch museum because Overwatch is, like, out of commission as in the present day of the game. But, like, it's just this cool, like, Pixar style animation where there's, like, a lot of funny to it and a lot of, like, emotion, but it's also a cool fight scene and it's also really well animated. It's crazy. I'm, like, obsessed. I went from, like, pretty interested to obsessed in a weekend. Like, not gonna lie.
You were saying that it's kind of like a MOBA. Does it have minions?
No. I mean, MOBA as in like the hero mechanics is okay. where it draws inspiration from MOBAs.
Paragon and Battleborn, they have minions and stuff.
Right.
For
those
sure.
are more similar to MOBAs from what I hear.
Yeah. If they're going to pick one, I feel like Overwatch is going to win. I mean, I've only played Battleborn. I haven't played Paragon, but I've watched a few Paragon, and I mean, that looks, it looks pretty good, but I don't know, like playing Battleborn, it feels like this, like you can't match, you know, that Blizzard money, you know, you can't yeah. match that. And it's, I'm going to see what happens, but I got to play it again. I played a little bit of the beta, so mm-hmm. I don't know. Go ahead, George. You're going to say something.
Is it fast? I feel like I've asked that before.
I think it is. I mean, like, if you think TF2 is fast, then you'll probably think this is fast.
Scout,
I mean,
on TF2 levels of fast.
There are characters like that. Tracer okay, obviously is like is the scout. Like, I don't know what to, like a doppelganger,
like the scout equivalent.
Yeah, she doesn't have a shotgun or anything, but she does. She has like jumps and she moves really fast and stuff. But a lot of characters do, like that character I was talking about earlier, Genji. He's mainly like, he's like an assassin kind of character. Mm-hmm. And he has like a slashing, like a dashing slash attack with his sword. But he can also like run up walls and stuff if you want to do that.
I just have noticed and really enjoy and hope this keeps going is a trending in first person shooters towards faster gameplay. And I think,
Oh, I was just going to say, if not fast, it's mobile. The game is very mobility heavy. Like how I said, the Junkrat character has a mind that you specifically use to like make yourself jump and like move you. Every character seems to have some sort of movement quality to them. So like there's a healer who, if you see a target that needs healing, you can aim at them, hit shift, and you'll fly to them. Like you'll do a flying dash.
Like still what I miss about old games. Seems like first person shooters for a long ass time went from being mobility based with super wacky creative guns to being slow cover based with realistic based guns. Like even in Halo, starting from Halo onwards, your characters just got much, much slower. Jumps kind of became more horizontal and less vertical, mm-hmm. and weapons required more spamming than precision. I mean, like still tactical spamming at that, but the reason I bring this up is because I loaded up the new Unreal Tournament the other week.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's fucking great. And it plays really? Like an old game, but with some of the fantastic, like most cutting edge new level graphics you've seen. But mm-hmm. your enemy characters running around are zigzagging. They're like, I don't know, 10, 12 pixels tall, tiny ass little targets. And then it's not how it was just refreshing to see a game look brand new, but play in a drastically different fundamental interpretation of how FPS works than what we've gotten used to. And looking at new developments with Cliffy B's Lawbreakers looks very, very similar. Super fast. That's why I was
so
asking
maybe
if
you'll
Overwatch
like Doom
is super
multiplayer.
Fast. Doom because, multiplayer.
Oh yeah,
looks
you
fast.
Played that, didn't you?
I don't.
The
I see.
Single
like
player,
I'm
I don't know.
Done with it. Like I used to play in my school's library, and like there it was a big network, so everyone was on this Quake server, and it had that similar type of gameplay like from Quake. And this other, I forgot this this other game that came out recently that was trying to be an esports that had kind of the same gameplay, but like I feel like I'm tired of that. I'm tired of the whole like jumping around and shooting rockets, having rocket placement for when they're gonna land and stuff
like
that.
The rocket launcher is the default weapon of choice.
Yeah,
I love
that. Yeah, so I feel like I'm done with it. Like I got scared because I might review Doom and I'm like, I hope multiplayer is not a big thing. I hope single player was like the main focus because I am not gonna like the multiplayer.
That seems to be the reception of the beta. People are a little disappointed that it doesn't play like classic Doom. The thing is, the irony though, is that Doom was never built as a multiplayer game like Quake was.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Like the multiplayer mode was
want it there. I don't
super
want it.
Janky, but it was there and it was revolutionary at the time. But it also did not drive the core development for, how are we going to build the weapons and the player's speed of movement and their jumping height and whatnot that they did take in Quake. So it seems like the general impression of the beta for the new Doom is that it's more like Halo than the modern Halos are. And yeah, like it's not Halo. At all like old Dooms, which sounds okay to me.
Hang 'em high, rockets.
Halo was fun sometimes in the right circumstances.
Oh, Halo was amazing back then. Come on,
Halo
now.
2 was. I Halo 1 multiplayer was kind of a clusterfuck on the PC, but.
All
Halo
pistols,
2
no,
was,
no,
was a good
pistols.
Time.
Land
it
parties,
had a good pistol,
no.
But they nerfed the pistol for Halo 2, even in the single player, which was, I think, kind of a shame for the single player.
Yeah, Halo was good. Halo 3 is the best.
I don't know. I feel like that, I'm.
No, I was going to change the subject, so go ahead if you're going
to. Okay. I feel like I'm not qualified to talk about the speed of Doom single player. Footage of the multiplayer looks fast. I like fast. Adrian Carmack and John Romero posted a video where they say they're up to something, and I feel like they might have just looked at footage of the single player of Doom, which looks kind of trash, and they're like, oh, fuck this, we can do better. Which is funny because the multiplayer footage I saw of Doom looked like good old game, but the single player footage of Doom I've seen looks like bad new game. But the impressions I get from the beta of the Doom multiplayer is that it feels like it's tacked on to some much more higher produced thing, which I guess is the single player. But god, that E3 footage they showed last year was drudgery. It was a chore to watch almost.
It was very red.
Oh, it was so, remember how everyone complained about Bloom and Brown in like 2008?
Yeah.
And here we are in 2016, literally 8 years later, and we have like the bloomiest, browniest Doom of them all coming out. It was also really bothering me how you got like an 8-7 second killing animation with the chainsaw when you're chainsawing through hordes of demon. It just didn't look fast or fluid, or I guess really the keyword is fun. It looked like you stopped and goed with every button press rather than smoothly flowing one button press into
blasting
another.
Through a room really quickly with precision shots,
which is what Doom
was.
Doom needs.
Yeah,
it's what the new Unreal Tournament is.
I love how this like kind of turned into a eulogy at the end.
Which Doom needs. I wanted to ask something about Overwatch. How is the melee combat? Because I was playing through Battleborn and it was like, I'm way like, don't you know those like kind of low budget first person games where you just see the animation of a character just wailing their arms back and forth? Like kind of how the melee combat is. It doesn't feel as satisfying. And I was just like, kind of put me off. I was just like, oh god.
Does Battleborn have like melee characters? Like characters that are primarily built melee? Okay.
Overwatch
the melee character. It does, actually.
Oh, okay.
So Reinhardt is a tank character with a big ass hammer. Genji is not melee primarily, but his ultimate, his dash attack is like one of his main kill moves, and his ultimate, he pulls out like his special sword and he becomes melee. There are a couple other characters that are decent meleeers.
Have you played it? Like, it feels satisfying. Like it has that Blizzard money. Okay. All right. Yeah. I might have to try it out then.
I mean, that's the thing. I would relate it to TF2 with how it feels overall, but sprinkle in the elements of like controlling a hero in a MOBA and being like, I have these abilities, they synergize, I can use them with other characters and we can like mount some cool, you know, plays. Like, that's kind of how Overwatch feels to me. But it's the objectives and all the maps and everything feel like Team Fortress 2 stuff, like push the cart or capture the points. Only gripe was a couple of the maps that I played in the beta could use some tweaking. There's one map called Hanamura, and it's like a, like, you know, Japanese sort of like cherry blossom garden, and there's like this like cool Japanese architecture in it and everything.
That reminds me of middle school.
And it's a 2-point capture and attack and defend. And so you have to capture the first point and it resets your timer to capture the second point. If the defending team dies on when the attacking team is attacking the first point, it's almost guaranteed that they get the point. And I'm saying, like, if like one or two people die, like the points are spaced so far apart that if you die in that map, unless you're like Tracer and you have the speed to get back into the match, it's going to take you like 20 to 30 seconds to respawn and walk back to the fight.
Ooh, that's Battlefield right there.
Yeah, and that's the only map where it's like that. Other maps, you get back in the fight in like 10 seconds with your respawn timer. But like Hanamura is like notorious. Like you die and it's like, well, there goes the first point. It's over. Like, other than that, though, I know they have more maps and I'm hoping they're going to have a lot more maps on launch. That was my only gripe. Everything else seemed fun, and I'm excited to get to know the other characters more, because I only really played Junkrat after I discovered him, because he was fucking awesome. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll give it a try. I've been looking for something to restore my love in FPSs, which I used to play FPS like all day when I was younger. Like, played.
Same.
Probably going to be cheap, which means we could all play it on the dead stream, actually.
Well, it's 40.
Oh, never mind. Well, that's still like...
it's all right.
Yeah. No, that's people complain about $60.
You know, I feel like I'm
complaining
about
$40.
Yeah, I just want to actually play. It's so weird when you have to, like, it's like, okay, I don't want to buy this game unless I'm going to play it for like at least... like, I don't know, a certain amount of hours, I guess.
The way I described it to my friends when we were talking, because, you know, I'm a person who put in 400 plus hours in TF2, which I know some people are like, oh, casual, but shut the fuck up. It's 400 hours. That's a lot of time to be playing one game. I don't care what game it is. sorry, people do that to me every time I talk about Monster Hunter and every time I talk about TF2, and I fucking hate it.
Well, I guess they have time. Because I sure enough do not.
Yeah, I've been feeling
400 hours of a guy with a full-time job. So
after the Gungeon review I put out, people were really angry that I had only 20 hours.
Yeah, it's like,
oh my god.
Anyway, moving on from that, before I start a war with the denizens of the deep web TF2 community, I described this to my friends that played TF2 with me as the next multiplayer game that we're going to sink like 100 or more hours, and I say myself easily I'm gonna do that for Overwatch. If it plays as well, and if it stays, you know, like if they have enough content, like enough maps and stuff. But with the hero lineup right now and the game modes, I could play this for a long time.
All right.
Anyway,
Sound of pretty much everything you said. Like, this sounds really promising and kind of comfy.
I hope I don't let you down.
Well, I tried a little bit of
I was just gonna say I'm holding Jimmy to my high expectations is all.
Oh, right. Careful, George. Overwatch is a lot of fun. I don't know if you're gonna enjoy that.
Shut up. I like fun. What do I have to do to prove it?
Actually, you reviewed Gungeon positively, so.
I know, right? Why does everyone think I was shitting on it? Well, I don't know, just a few people.
Well, no, you definitely weren't crapping on it. You definitely brung it back at the end, other than, like, you know, the other game you played, and you totally took a big dump on it. I mean,
oh man,
I mean, diarrhea.
I had more fun with Gungeon than I did Hyperlight. Like, every time I loaded up Gungeon, I had a smile on my face until the midpoint of the run, or when I just wanted to restart after getting hit on the first boss, because why even bother with the rest of the run from that point on? But anyways.
So, on that topic, after you get to say absolutely everything that you ever wanted to about all your games, because we have not given you any time to talk so far.
I'm just chilling.
After you do that, just remind me Hyper Light Drifter, because I have a thing to say that's not related to Hyper Light Drifter, but that's what reminded me of it.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say that I in the FPS world, I've played the Gears of War 4 beta was out. I know all you, the gearheads, the two gearheads that are out there that listen to this podcast.
me and you?
Yeah. That's it? Oh, gosh. You know, like the ones that actually play, like the ones that understand how competitive it can be, and you know, right, the wall why bouncing and just like the satisfaction when it actually works. And you would think that it's 2016 and they can get this thing working properly, and I understand it's in beta. No. But damn, when it works, it's amazing, right? But when it doesn't, and your shotgun, you know, doesn't blast someone away, and they're just taking extra shots, and you know, the regular Gears crap that you've been dealing with for years, after, you know, and unless you have a LAN connection, you know, if you're doing a LAN party, like it's still there, and it almost makes me not want to buy Gears again. I am totally a Gears fan. Wow. Like if there's any FPS I love to death, it's that game. Cliffy B ruined it, but it's fine. I'll still buy it. Yeah, he's a bastard. Cliffy, if you're watching this, you're a bastard.
I won't disagree. I really don't like his blog, but I thought he left after Judgment, which was like the first negatively received Gears game, and he even tweeted about how like, wow, they really... I had a good product going and they really dropped the ball.
Oh, they really dropped the ball? I mean, he's the one who brung the double barrel shotgun and told us to shut the hell up, that we should just get used to it.
Maybe. What year was that?
He likes to say a lot of crap on his Twitter and show his girlfriend nude, basically. I don't like the guy. I really don't like the guy at all. If I meet him, I'll be like, dude, I don't like you, dude, but thank you for bringing Gears of War.
What if
like,
he turns out to be happy and nice in person?
I doubt he will be a PewDiePie.
He just, I don't know. I feel like he could work on his internet reputation. Anyways, besides the personal thing, the thing is,
which is respectable.
That is also evident.
Yeah.
But okay, he left Epic, I think, in 2011. So anything that happened from that point onwards, you cannot blame on Cliffy B.
Yeah. No, I'm just being an angry nerd. I'm just being an angry nerd and blaming also, it all on the director.
Take you back to the past.
I really like Unreal Tournament, and that was another one of Cliffy B's babies. So I reluctantly stick up for him sometimes because Unreal Tournament was the hype of shit.
I'm just mad. Like Gears 4, I probably will buy it because just like the Ultimate Edition, the beta was a little wonky. And they fixed it, and Ultimate Edition is pretty damn good, even though the story only runs in 30 FPS, but it's okay, whatever.
Old
Xbox One garbage tech. This whole new story that they're making modular, like, Xbox and PS4s, we're going into something else. Can it be on freaking Windows?
Don't spray it.
Yeah, I am spitting right now all over my mic. Anyways, I'm done before I get too angry and then go on a rant for about 10 minutes. I'm good. Gears 4, guys.
But you also play other games, though. You play Layers of Fear, as I'm reading in the notes right here.
you're trying to empty me out. You're trying to milk me right now, huh?
I just don't want to get into my ranty topic until you say your stuff.
Well, all right. I'll be quick here. Layers of Fear.
Don't be quick. Be as long as you want.
You like it long, Jimmy? All right, so
let's talk about my topic. Why don't we? No, go ahead.
I beat Salt, and it was a fantastic game. It is probably some of the best $18 I've spent.
Ah, yes.
Nice.
Some of the bosses I would think is easy. It's vindication, sweet, sweet vindication.
This is George as Superman, like getting energy from the sun.
When friends after like the
after
same
the kryptonite that was Hyperlight Drifter.
it's rejuvenating.
It's a really good game. The bosses were kind of easy sometimes, but I mean, it's a two-guy team. It was still fun as hell, like really, really fun. Layers of Fear. I gotta say, probably one of the best horror games I played in a while, because I feel like it was different. The way it was designed, I don't know if any of you guys have played Layers of Fear.
I know of it, and I have watched Jim Sterling's Let's Play when it was like early access, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he like, you know, made fun of it the whole time. But there was some legitimate design decisions to make it very trippy and creepy.
Yeah, just subtle things. I like very subtle things. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, scary all the way through, but it was a better experience compared to some of the other horror games that are just kind of like, oh, we're just gonna throw out a horror game. Like, this one actually felt like it was doing something a little different. I wouldn't say new, but different. There's a lot of things that if you move your camera off the screen, it will change the entire room.
Yeah.
And
ooh, yeah,
there's some really clever things. Like, it will show you there's a light switch here, and when you go for the light switch, you turn around and something's missing. Like, there's always these little subtle things that it's kind of like when you played PT and things were being written on the wall, and you could have totally missed it. Just very subtle things, and it freaks me. It's really good. It's really
I'm
good.
I'm a huge sucker for like camera placement gags in horror games. Like, though, I will never think those are played out.
Yeah, it's because I mean, those in the end are one of the strongest tools for being in a game, is leading someone to a spot and then like getting them to look in a specific direction, and you could set up very, very game only like visuals and scenarios and things that could happen where, like, in a movie, someone would have to explain if they like walked into a room and then turned around, they're like, where's the door? Like, but in a game, you could just like have someone walk into a room and the door disappears. And then they're like, where the fuck did...
Yes, that's the stuff
door?
I like.
What direction did I come from? And then they can't find any door. And then it's like, that's real, like, that's confusion and fear happening to you, not like you. Looking in on
and
it.
That is layers of fear. You don't know where you're at. You're like a rat in a constantly moving maze, basically, is what layers of fear is. And it's constantly gonna throw like little things at you that will freak you out and put you on edge almost. And you like, the journey is more fearful than like kind of like the jump scares. There was I don't want to spoil anything just in case anyone is planning on playing it, like, because there's a lot of good moments in there. There was one time that I will always remember, is in like near the beginning-ish of the game, you naturally are pointed, to go up the stairs to turn on the light. So when you go to turn on the light, you turn around and a picture that was recently all the way on the wall is right behind you. And it just drives you, it scared the hell out of me to turn around. And because that's the type of feeling that you get when you're in your house and you're like, wait a minute, I didn't put that there. Wait a minute. And you get that, you know, that little, the blood tingles go all the way up to your head. Yeah, that's the feeling there. And Layers of Fear is great. And I say a thumbs up. If you want a horror game that's a little bit different than the, you know, the scary monster chasing you, this is definitely something you should check out. That's it.
Damn, nice. Good to hear. So real quick, I got a curveball to throw to you guys.
Ooh.
Okay.
You should
I'm
see
ready
the,
with my bat.
I wish you could hear the shit eating grin on my face right now. But before we get into other news topics.
Good vision.
They added iframes to Hyperlight Drifter.
Oh.
Why?
I guess after like mounting criticism over the game being too hard, the developers decided the best way to address that would be given a few iframes during your first
you guys are
few
a bunch
frames
of
dash.
Scrubs. You guys are a bunch of scrubs.
What do you mean by you guys?
Whoever wanted this, I was wondering. I'm let's playing it, right? I'm watching a friend let's play, and I see him dashing through an enemy, and I'm like, wait a minute, why is that happening? And I didn't think about it until you said it right now.
But they did change it in the update to give you a few iframes during dashing, which is something that, like, I mean, I don't know. I know. This has like become a thing, and I was swearing the whole time. I don't think the game's that bad. I really like how you didn't have iframes during dodging. It
Yeah, I didn't think it was necessary. I never had a problem.
I
was just like, oh, if I dash through the hurdy things, it hurts me. I will just not do that then.
Yeah, like I had to re-understand how dashing in games works, because you usually have iframes and here you didn't. And I appreciated and enjoyed the learning process of like re-strategizing where to put that dash in the middle of a combo.
If you want to talk about iframes, we could talk about Salt and how the dash doesn't work sometimes, or the roll doesn't work sometimes, and it's incredibly buggy as hell. We could talk about
that
since you like Salt so much. How the iframes in that stupid roll doesn't work most of the time.
Well, you don't rely on them. You use them to roll through an enemy, and
Let's talk about what Jimmy wanted to talk about. Okay.
Oddly enough, we came back to Hyper Light Drifter anyway, so it reminded me of the thing. So when we first had our little heated discussion on Hyper Light Drifter, George talked about Dark Souls 1 and the fact that like Dark Souls 1 also puts you out in like a you can go anywhere but some areas are harder than others thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I played Dark Souls 1 for the first time the other day. And I subsequently uninstalled it, but because I when I played it first, it was games with Windows Live was fucking it up and a whole bunch of other things.
Yeah.
Some of that stuff is fixed now, and so it's more playable for a person like me. So I go in, I start playing it, having a good time. I played the little like dungeon that you start in. Thought that was great. The boss wasn't too difficult, but I understood like why it would be hard for someone like you know to learn them. But I got it. Like I got it down pretty quick. No problem. Go through the thing, come out the side, whatever. Talk to all the people who are mean to you because they're like another undead or whatever the fuck. And that guy who's sitting there, that
the
bitch boy who's just
knight.
Whatever the fuck, bitch boy is what I remember him as. He was like, you said something to the effect of, there's two bells to ring. One of them is up at top of the church. Or if you're really a masochist, you can go into the underground or whatever. And so I was like, cool. So what you're saying is, the next logical progression of the game is go up to do the easier thing and then go down to do the harder thing.
Yeah.
Sounds good. So I go up and I'm like, it kind of all looks the same because it's just like stone and grass, whatever. I'm like 5 steps away from the start. No big deal. Talk to this like guy and he's part of the White Coven. Cool. So White Coven standing in like a little chapel area, totally the church. So, okay. Here's some stairs. Go up again. I am now as up as I can go. What's this little hole thing in the ground? This is probably the way I go. So I drop down the hole, find some enemies. Tight. I'm going the right way. I am going up to ring the bell at the church. Apparently not, says somebody else who explained this to me afterwards, because I went to a graveyard and the skeletons there fucked me the fuck up. And I was like, if this is the easy area one like way, I don't want to do this, because those guys took fucking 12 hits to kill. And I'm like, I get that the combat is like patient, but this is just boring because I'm just backing up and shielding and waiting for them to swing and then hitting them. But they're not dying because they have big health bars. And I don't understand why
that
looks like the most. Well, that's not, though, because apparently I'm told that I was going the wrong way and that that's like a way farther area that I shouldn't have gone to yet. But it seemed like completely the correct direction. And also they were like basic skeleton 001 with like default sword and shield, no armor, just bones. And they were like destroying me because they just had too big of health bars. And someone told me that it's not that. It's a different way, but...
No, but...
I don't know,
No, but, I mean, you remember what George was saying? Like, this doesn't happen in Dark Souls, right? Right? Hyper Light Drifter? We're going the wrong way?
No, I said...
Right? It doesn't go the right way. I mean, it happened to me in Dark Souls 2 as well. I end up going to the castle place, whatever, where there's a bunch of hard people of... I went right after the bonfire thing and you get into the hub area. I went to the right and went all the way up and I had the same experience. And I just like trucked through it and I ended up at a boss and I was like, no, I am definitely going the wrong way and had to go all the way back around.
And don't take this as me like calling George out or anything. This is not meant for that. I don't even think that lines up with what I'm trying to say. But it was just very weird that, like, as far as I understood, I went the exact way that the game conveyed to me was, like, the easiest way to go and probably the most hopeful. And someone was like, no, the going up to the church is a completely different direction. I was like, I'm on a hill and one way is up. Like, what other direction was there to fucking go? I'm going to reinstall it and try it again.
Skeletons, but like, they're on a downward incline.
After you go all the way up the hill to get to them, like, you don't know that there's a downward incline until you, like, drop into that little pit.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And the hill that you're talking about is, like, nothing compared to the hill. Like, if you turn around and look, you'll see this huge, like, mountain pathway leading up to the top of an aqueduct that is a much, much sharper incline upwards than the downward incline that these skeletons are on. And that's where you go. And what I was saying...
So what you're saying is, I dropped down in the correct spot, but I needed to turn around and go up another staircase behind the good spot.
Well, I don't really know what you mean by dropping down either.
I went up a staircase after the guy who's in the white coven.
Okay.
There was, like, a ledge, and then there's, like, a little cave and two little archways, and you could drop, like, 5 feet down.
It seems like you're describing the ruined church that the bonfire is located at. And when the Crestfallen Knight tells you to go to a cathedral upwards, he's not talking about the ruined church that he is, like, sitting on the foothill stairs of. He's talking about something that requires a journey to get to.
Well, he doesn't really indicate that. And also, can I just say the differences between up to the church and up to the cathedral are very, very slight. I just want to point that out, that my experience with Dark Souls was very misleading so far. I'm going to try again.
But wait.
Because I enjoyed up to that point.
I think I remember you saying that you did try it earlier when in the Games for Windows Live days.
I never got out of the dungeon area.
Oh,
at the start.
I thought you got to the Undead Burg, which is where those ramps upwards lead to. But
no, I killed the boss of that area, went to the bonfire, and I couldn't handle the fucking Games with Windows Live shit anymore because it kept fucking up my game.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so yeah, basically what you do is go up the hill instead of down. Once you start seeing enemies that are clearly overleveled past your character, back away and feel out different routes. And that's what I'm saying. Like the whole game's open to you in the beginning. If you're super cocky and douchey, you can run through those skeletons and, like, get to the end game zone super fast and just dodge everything as you sprint through them. But since you're not, you're going to have to do it legit.
Right. But what I'm saying is, I feel that it was poorly conveyed through the guy talking to you that up to the cathedral did not mean up to the, you know, church. And it was, you do go up a hill and staircases before you get to the skeletons. The skeletons are on a decline after you go up a hill. So the directions I felt like I followed were very misleading. And I know that's a Dark Souls thing. That's why they have, like, an amulet that does nothing, but it's meant to, like, make you think it does something, but it actually just does fucking nothing.
Also, but keep in mind, it's a, like, kind of low-budgeted game translated from Japanese by not a very well-budgeted localization effort, on top of already being really, really vague and under-conveying everything by design. Like you're dealing with that as well as what is also becoming obvious in Dark Souls 3. Like, not a super strenuous translation effort.
I mean,
anyways, I just wanted to say that. I just want to say my piece. We'll report back later with more Dark Souls breaking news.
I don't know. Like, all right, yeah, I'm not gonna say anything. It seems like Dark Souls to me. Like, that's just is an open world crazy game where you're gonna get your behind shoveled if you go the wrong direction until you get to an area that you can actually go through.
Right, but in any other context, let's throw the words Dark Souls out the window. In any other context, would you not agree that a skeleton with no armor, with the most basic of weapons, does not look like a particularly threatening presence in any RPG?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not disagreeing. It's absolutely misleading. But, like, I mean, it's Dark Souls, you know? You know, like, when you say it's Dark Souls, you know, it means, like, any criticism against Dark Souls, it doesn't matter. Like, what? Yeah. No. What? Something's wrong. It's misleading?
That should actually be, like, the tagline. Dark Souls, colon, it's Dark Souls.
If you got a problem, get good, son. That's there it is.
Exactly. Why is that so controversial?
I don't know, man. I'm not going to talk about Hyper Light, but let's go. Let's... we'll see you after this break.
Should I just play the Tribes theme again during the break this week?
Yes.
Okay, that's canon. It's happening again.
Tribes.
Tribes.
Wow. The wow was really like the icing on the Tribes cake.
It really sells how good the game is. Wow.
Do we just want to roll in talking about the Tribes theme?
Sure, we're already in.
Okay, we're in.
News time.
Do you guys remember what game politics is?
No.
Or was?
No.
Really?
I actually never heard of that.
Okay, god damn, it's just me then. All right, so in George news, there was this blog called Game Politics that launched in 2005 around the time the hot coffee San Andreas controversy was going on. And they turned it into a really, really... good, powerful force for covering the legislative efforts of American governments and politics, and how they were trying, often almost always unsuccessfully, to regulate and legislate the video games industry, starting with coverage of the hot coffee San Andreas Rockstar Games scandal, moving on to coverage and implications of EA having a monopolistic stand on NFL games through their licensing deal with the Madden franchise, which led to a successful class action lawsuit. And they also really, really got on Jack Thompson's bad side, which may or may not have led to him being disbarred. From 2005 to 2008, this was a really, really good blog, but then the editor left and they really haven't been doing so much original editorials from that point onwards is just reporting on other people's news. And in early April, they decided they're going to close down, that they're just partially not needed as much anymore after the 2011 lawsuit that decided that video games have First Amendment protection, but also because the editor who launched it and really cared is just kind of gone.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, game politics is shutting down.
Why?
GameStop is launching a full publishing division called Game Trust, and this kind of scares the hell out of me. Even though it makes a lot of sense business wise. Yeah, exactly. With digital marketplaces really dominating the way people get their games nowadays, GameStop's brick and mortar retails should be on the decline. I don't think they are.
Nope.
But this seems like a move where they are seeing the writing on the wall and want to be prepared for when it happens, which is still
they want to be prepared when GameStop pre-order exclusives start phasing out.
Well, that's what scares me about them launching a publishing house. What kind of more bullshit are they going to do with this publisher while still desperately clinging on to their stores while they're still profitable? And how sad is it going to be when they finally do have to close down and all those people need to find new jobs.
I just want them to be another blockbuster and it just fade into the background. And they're like, oh, you remember like GameStop? You remember
that? Dude, but think about how many YouTubers are going to start competing with us then.
You know what's interesting is, speaking of Blockbuster, right when Blockbuster was going out, they tried to compete with Netflix, remember?
And it didn't work. They were really bad.
Yeah. They did like a Blockbuster like mail-in service like Netflix had before Netflix became all digital. Or not all like digital, but
10% of the selection and a week extra waiting time.
Also Blockbuster. But would it be interesting if this publishing move is a similar death throes indication for GameStop?
Maybe. I guess the problem is that GameStop doesn't have to really be that desperate right now. Like I said, there's not a rash of GameStop stores closing across the country. I mean, everyone assumes there will be, so they have to branch out, but
yeah,
I guess they're better off doing it now rather than later. But yeah, the reason why this scares the shit out of me is because of the as I mentioned earlier with EA and Madden, like it's almost, of course, it's not with the state of the industry being as diverse and healthy as it is, but if the game industry was not as diverse and healthy as it is, this would almost be kind of a monopolistic move. Like the implications of a retailer being in control and partnered with the developers of the products that they're selling is not really economically healthy at the micro scale for other industries. Like this is why Walmart is able to extort farmers into horrible profit gouging deals where basically farmers have to undercut their own profits in order to be able to have their stuff stocked.
That's why
certain retailers.
That's why the farmers give them like rubbish fruit and vegetables.
And you know what? Actually, on a more related level, this is why GameStop pre-order bonuses, which we love to complain about, are so pervasive in the first place. They're striking these deals, and now they have an actual publisher that is going to have even more of an outlet to be striking more of these deals and kind of pushing more of that down our throats at the same time. They have signed on a couple already established developers. Ready at Dawn, who you might remember as the Order 1886 people. Insomniac, Frozen Byte, Tequila Works. Tequila. What did they do? Deadlight? Rhyme? I've heard of Rhyme.
Rhyme is an R-I-M-E.
I've heard the name. I can't really picture the game, but yeah, kind of like middle of the road single AA developers that, and in the case for Ready at Dawn making these 8-hour cinematic adventures, I feel like they've always needed a different kind of distribution method. You know what I would want to see happen? I would want to see some kind of digital rental market open up that's not PlayStation Now.
Absolutely.
Does Gamefly do that? Or Gamefly mails stuff to you, doesn't it?
But also in that case, the Order 1886, it was like a horrible purchase, but it was not an incompetently made game. It was just like the most average of thing. It was something pretty to gawk at for like a day. I red boxed it for $2, played through the majority of it, and for that deal, it was like fine. I can't complain. And I feel like if games like The Order 1886 existed in a time where the rental market was still alive and well, as it was back in the day when old Resident Evil games lasted about as long as that one did, then it wouldn't be dealing with such harsh criticism.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, it'll be weird to see like really good games come out of Game Trust. Be like Adult Swim,
even
and like
the name
Death's Gambit coming out from Adult Swim. Like it's just weird. It's just like, what? Adult Swim makes games? Like I don't know.
But at least it's like called something wacky and fun, like Adult Swim. Game Trust is like borderline Orwellian implications.
Sounds like a loan. It sounds like a loan bank.
There was the old trust busting endeavors in the late 1800s of the government trying to break up all the horrible monopolies that were making the Victorian era so hard to live in, and they were called trusts, and this thing's called Game Trust.
And of course, it's not going to be as bad, but it's still like another funny, hilarious stumble of the big budget side of the industry taking towards.
I don't like this guy's face. Can I say that? I don't like this guy's face at all. This guy's face. His face. He looks too happy, man. Looks too happy.
At the top of the GameStop article thing?
I'm not saying he shouldn't be happy. It's just, I don't know, man.
Wait.
Kind of looks like Ted Cruz.
Who's Ted Cruz?
No, who's the face?
It's in the link.
It's a guy named Stanley. Yeah, but listeners aren't going to know that.
That's a very Stanley face, I would say that. Yeah,
Stanley, VP of Internal Development and Diversification. I don't know, he just looks like a guy to me. Oh, look at that hairline. That's what I'm going to look like in a couple years.
Mm. You already look like that, George?
Yeah.
No, I just got to... Just gotta master the nice. see that like swipe left and right down the natural part he has.
Yeah, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're looking way better than he is, especially with that rooster haircut.
Oh, thank you, Matt. You're such a good friend.
I almost jumped your bones when you came out my bathroom.
No one has the context for that, but we're just gonna move on.
Let's not tell the listeners too much.
Speaking of no context and oof. What's the next topic?
Ken Levine's next project is going to be an interactive Twilight Zone movie thing.
Wow.
Okay.
Which sounds fun. I will admit, it also sounds like the most Ken Levine thing ever. So yeah, you guys know Ken Levine, right? BioShock creative director.
Yeah.
He is. Sure. okay. He Have you ever heard an interview with Ken Levine?
No.
He talks in a really low-pitched, gravelly voice like this, trying to sell you hard on how edgy and provocative the next dystopic sci-fi thriller he comes up with is going to be. He really wants to...
So he sounds like the Twilight Zone guy? Because that's what the Twilight Zone guy sounds like.
Kind of. Like Rod Sterling. Rod Sterling's like more higher pitched, but that's why I think this sounds like the most Ken Levine ever. He says,
"You're about to enter a game."
This is an actual quote from him regarding this Twilight Zone project. "Playing my games, you can probably tell Twilight Zone is something I grew up with. They speak to a larger truth. Their morality plays fables, and often they're about a character who is going through an experience that's central to their life, but also speaks to a large part of the human condition." So creative director of BioShock working on a Twilight Zone interactive movie thing brought up by a company called Interlude, who previously did an interactive music video version of Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone and also a promotional Coca-Cola Hulk Ant-Man Super Bowl commercial thing. And I wish I played with like a hands-on demo for how this stuff works so I could understand what exactly the interactive Twilight Zone movie thing is going to be.
Yeah.
Because it's seen, according to the article, the Wired article that I'm pulling my news from, it says that Interlude's technology lets users seamlessly move between multiple streams of video. Having the guy behind BioShock be in control of some interactive video version of campy sci-fi horror like the Twilight Zone. That sounds like fun. That sounds actually really appropriate, like a good person to get on that project.
Mm.
Like you can say what you want about BioShock Infinite or just BioShock itself. I feel like those problems kind of got bogged down by how big of a project they were. But doing an interactive episode of the Twilight Zone where the viewers' expectations are played with via twists, that sounds right up this guy's alley.
Mm.
He's really good at that stuff, even... Say what you will about the games. Ken Levine's really good at twists.
Twists.
And Twilight Zone is all about the twists.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm not saying is Twilight Zone about the twists. Is it just me was what I was going to say. Or does every like named developer, like every developer that has that like people know like by now, like Cliffy B, Ken Levine, Peter Molyneux, whatever, have like a very distinct voice and way of speaking?
Yes.
Is there a single one of them that just like talks like
a regular person?
Like indistinct.
Landon
like just
Polanski?
Like kind of a... Well, I mean I'm talking about like AAA developers. Not that Duck Game isn't AAA quality, because it definitely is. More so, I would say. But I'm saying, like,
definitely not
people
Todd.
At, like, multi-million dollar. Todd Howard?
Todd sounds like he's going to seduce you.
Yeah, Todd Howard, I think, is distinct. I want to say Tim Kaine. He seems like just a vanilla guy.
Who's that?
Obsidian.
Exactly.
Yeah, probably exactly. Someone who doesn't market his personality as hard as his games.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, he's...
Speaking of marketing their games...
Dark Souls 3 producer Namkai Bando must have done a great job marketing that game because it's their fastest selling game ever. Which is surprising. It doesn't usually happen at number threes of franchises, but the video game industry doesn't really follow the rules of other franchises. Fucking Metal Gear Solid 5 is the highest selling Metal Gear Solid game, and that's like number five.
Hang on.
Yeah.
I just want to...
Yeah.
You've been saying this for like 2 weeks, and I thought it's... I think it...
Am I mispronouncing something that I don't know I'm mispronouncing?
It's Bandai Namco.
It is Bandai Namco.
You have an out right now. If you say it's a joke, I'll believe you.
No, it's Namkai Bando.
The actual company is Bandai Namco.
No, it's... What are you talking... What's Bandai Namco?
Come on. I think Dark Souls 3 sold fast.
I think we can, really give credit to the pizza rolls. Pizza rolls, the cross promotion that was happening there. Praise the rolls. You saw
Slashy Souls, iPhone minigame. Yeah, really, really knocked it out of the park with that one.
No.
The pre-orders spiked.
It was the pizza rolls, man. Pizza rolls.
Hey,
there you go.
Dude. If they... I would actually like...
that's what the picture says. I swear.
Really?
I swear. Look at the chat.
Probably the 80s cartoon commercial that they did.
This is not a real ad. Okay. I thought it was a real fucking ad.
Dude, that is a real ad.
Slashy Souls is real.
That is a real ad. Those Dinos. That's real, dude. That's legit.
That is the company who makes
the pizza rolls.
That is a picture of somebody from Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
With Photoshop.
With Photoshop. Okay, moving on. Though, real talk, if there was some like shitty sellout DLC for Dark Souls 3 where your Estus flasks turn into pizza rolls, 10 out of 10 would buy instantly. I'll forego Overwatch to play Pizza Souls.
That's like the Sonic the Hedgehog level Twitter message right there.
Yeah.
and he has a picture of Sonic and a pizza roll in this one too. Oh my gosh.
He does.
Oh my gosh.
If you scroll down farther, April 19th, there was a tweet. Don't let this happen to you. Stock up on pizza rolls before #420. #betterwhenbaked. Great.
Dude, Tostinos, dude. Tostinos, dude.
Went off the fucking rails.
Tostinos pizza rolls are my favorite microwave mood.
They're the favorite fruit of Warge Jeedman.
While we're talking about Namkai Bando's fastest selling game launch ever, Sark Dolls.
Sark Dolls, everybody. This is the kind of quality content that you come to the TOVG podcast for.
The
VOTG podcast.
I also would like to return us to a previous topic of weeks past. This is the big news of the season, obviously, maybe the year. But the Slay Patian 4.5.
5.4
is being further verified by Giant Bomb. Yeah, we have.
I'm sorry if no one's following this running joke right now. It's not a very good one.
We have Austin Walker and Jeff Gertzman swearing that it's real. Just like
I had to look at those names on the screen to see if you were saying them forwards or reversed. It's like Austin Walker. Which one's the right one?
Austin Walker has a source somewhere way up in his connections. He gave him all sorts of secret documents, spilling the beans on this hot scoop.
Throughout the document, Sony repeatedly reminds developers that the frame rate of games in the special mode for the PS4.5 must meet or exceed the frame rate of the game in the original PS4 system. The idea seems to be they want to push out a more expensive version of the console that more or less lines up with a to play an alternate version of the same game with like just basically better graphic settings. But they also have to play smoother or equal to the frame rate of the original version. The new PlayStation 4.5 is, according to these documents, called Neo, the PS4 Neo, which, of course, could change during official reveal and maybe an official launch. I mean, the Wii was the revolution for a good long while.
A better name.
I agree. But also Wii, like, is super distinct and everyone loved to giggle about it. And that definitely helped them a bit.
I know.
So the information in here is a little bit reassuring, though. It still sounds like a clusterfuck of a project, but Austin Walker says there will be no Neo-only games. Sony will not let developers separate the Neo user base from the original PS4 players while playing on PSN and also in the marketing of their projects. Sony explicitly and repeatedly states that developers cannot offer exclusive gameplay options or special unlockables for PS4 Neo players either. The PS4 and Neo versions of a game will need to have parity with regard to peripheral support, so don't expect Neo games to have exclusive VR modes, which, if I remember, it was like one thing we could agree on would be an actual acceptable route out of trying to put out a like half-step generational iteration this time.
I think what they're saying is they can't have exclusive VR modes, where I think what we were saying was the processing power can help the VR modes run better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, which run would passively. Still be the case if it's the same VR on both platforms.
Mm.
It sounds more like an expansion pack for the N64, except that was $50 and this will probably be $400. You know, and get a little bit more resolution, a little more frame rate.
It's a full-on... Wait a minute, it's a full-on console or add-on?
It's a full-on console.
Oh, for the same price that it came out with.
I'm guessing it would be reasonable to estimate they would launch the PS4.5 the same price they launched the PS4.
Wait for GameStop to have those trade-in deals?
Oh, you mean GameTrust with their hot new The Order 1886?
Yes, I'm pretty sure that's what's going to happen.
Oh, man, I hope Ratchet & Clank doesn't get roped in on this. I'm really looking forward to playing the new Ratchet & Clank, by the way.
I've heard it's very good.
Yeah, it got good reviews, and I got a code, and as soon as I crank away at Dark Souls and fucking Minecraft story mode, after that, I'm doing Ratchet & Clank.
Oof. I've been wanting to test out Minecraft story mode to see if it's actually good.
Oh, I just, whether it's good or not, it's going to make for a hilarious video, which... is the idea. All right, last but not least, we're going to wrap up with a story about how Microsoft is wrapping up their production of the Xbox 360 console. After 10 years, they are no longer going to be rolling these things out of assembly lines. So if you want to buy an Xbox 360 from now on, it's going to have to be used. Also, yeah, the Xbox One has backwards compatibility with some games. As soon as they do
not all of them.
Metal Gear Solid
Marvel's
Collection.
Capcom 2 is not backwards compatible.
MGS Collection, let's do it. Where's it at, Microsoft? Get it together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, even though the Xbox One is kind of like, you know, the Xbox 360 anyway, right? Same frames.
Okay, Stamper. They're not going to be discontinuing the Xbox Live service for the Xbox 360. Server support for the games are going to remain online and active. Gamers will be able to continue to buy over 4,000 360 games or 360 accessories while supplies last. And they're still going to run out support. Yeah, no, they're just stopping production, which seems like the right time to, honestly.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like that big of... I mean, it's news, but like...
It's also
not bad
news. Like, even though it is, oh, they're stopping a thing they've been doing for 10 years. Like, yeah, it's old tech.
10 years is a long time for a game console.
Yeah. And I'd really like it if this gen is 10 years. Because that's a good protection for the consumer.
It's already old, my friend. It's already old.
Yeah.
It was old when
it
came
out. By this
gen,
you mean VR or something?
God, you're kind of right. Because They pulled profits on consoles this gen rather than selling at loss. Anyways, that's what we got for today. It's kind of weird that we're like wrapping up this 10-year anniversary. Good job, 360. Clap your hands together. It's that's a wrap sort of thing. When that's not really a bad story, but I still feel like I'm just looking at the dark side of life all the time.
Because this is 10 years since we've been doing the podcast.
Side, of life.
Happy anniversary.
I don't want to whistle into my mic because it probably clipped.
Well, guys, I
ruined another thing.
No, yours didn't clip. I mean, mine would. I don't have a good mic.
What are you saying, Jimmy? Your mic is fine. I can hear you clearly.
Always look on the bright side of my mic.
And here is when we go off the rails. 360, yeah. No scope.
Shit.
The way the delivery on that was great. I'll give that an A+ Bush.
Bush out of Bush.
Bush out of Bush.
Is that your rating system?
10 bushes out of one bush.
That's a good ratio.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I'd do colors. Like green bush colors would be the best and red bush would be the worst.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like green out of purple or something. And I was
blue would be the middle.
Okay, I'm done.
It's like the terrorism alert scale. Except with the bush. And I'm going to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye, everybody. Bye. Tell your mom about us or something.
Yeah.
Good one, Matt. Got him.
It's gonna be another case of Matthew just yelling, "Why do I live on planet Earth?"
Right.
Planet Earth's not that bad. You just gotta live in the right locations and be born the right kind of person.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.